RTL Original Podcast.
This episode of DNA is different. There's no mystery to solve, no crime to unravel in hindsight. What you will hear today are four stories of abuse in Luxembourg. Four young people, each hurt by someone they trusted. A headmaster, a teacher, an uncle, a father, a stepfather. This episode sketches their paths and their silences, and the ways in which families, schools, and institutions failed to act. It is sensitive, it is uncomfortable. But after many years of silence, Dave, Bianca, Nicole, and Steve were ready to speak. Welcome to DNA, Luxembourg Crime Podcast. The first time Steve was abused, he was around 7 or 8. He didn't understand it. He didn't have the language. "Do you feel guilty?" he would later be asked. Yes, he did. Because children don't first think about the criminal who harms them. They think about themselves. Did I do something wrong? Was it my fault? The perpetrator was a school teacher, a headmaster. Not Steve's own teacher, but someone he met through music and theater projects at school. A respected figure. And for a child of that age, respect and obedience are the same thing. You listen to adults, you do what they say. And this teacher told Steve something no child should ever hear. If you say anything, something very bad will happen to you. Psychological pressure, says Roland Seligman, is the most dangerous part of sexual abuse. Abusers deliberately select their victims. They have a feeling for children in psychological emergency. Children who are quiet, children who don't resist, children who won't tell. At the same time Steve was being abused, he lost 3 close relatives in his family. The grief blurred into the secrecy. He learned to carry pain as though it belonged to him. And that sentence, "if you say anything," became part of him. Like a tattoo, he says. Tattooed for life by someone meant to protect him. Steve wasn't the only one. Dave was also abused. A teacher and a similar pattern. "He chose them because they blended in," Dave would say. "Quiet boys, not the troublemakers, not loud, and not the kind who might tell." Steve would later look around his classroom and think, "The loud boys, the outspoken boys, they would have talked, but not him, and also not Dave." Nicole, not her real name, was 5 years old when the abuse began. It was inside her own home. Her uncle and her father. There were no strangers, only familiar voices telling her, "I'm doing this for you. I don't want to hurt you, but you must never tell anyone." And when your abuser is family, their words become the truth. Years and years of manipulation changed the shape of reality for Nicole. She was protecting her siblings. She didn't want to destroy the home they were living in. They were 4 children. Life was already difficult. And going to the police was not even an option. It was unimaginable. And that's the cruelty of all of these cases. Victims protect everyone around them except themselves. They shield their siblings from shame. They protect the parent who's hurting them. And they guard the very system that should be guarding them. A 4th victim, Bianca, lived exactly the same paradox. Her father abused her, and he had one weapon that silenced her completely. Her younger brother. If she told anyone, something would happen to him. Her younger brother was everything to her, and so she kept quiet. But trauma never stays quiet, and it leaks. Bianca began misbehaving at school. She got in trouble, repeated years. Her teacher called home. They thought she needed discipline. No one saw what was eating her from the inside. Like Steve, Bianca did not reveal her abuse in a courtroom. It came out in a living room, at an aunt's house. In 15 minutes of gentle questioning, she felt that something was wrong and someone was noticing, and her aunt was really caring. But it was too late for her father. The man who had abused her had taken his own life before she could admit to her aunt that her father had done this to her. Bianca was left with the paradox. How do you hate a person who is gone? How do you condemn the man who also had good moments? He was my father after all. Psychologist Claudia De Boer explains, sometimes the mind preserves a positive image. Because if everything collapses into darkness, the entire world collapses with it. Bianca's uncle was sentenced to 9 years in prison. Her father never faced justice. Children rarely speak in sentences. They speak in signals. A sudden change in behavior, drawings, silence, indirect gestures. Victims wait for an adult to interpret their message. They hope someone will recognize it. They do not sit down and explain what happened step by step. The adult must see a sign. Steve learned to speak through drawing. When I couldn't speak, he says, I drew. His sketches were a way of breathing, pain translating into the lines. Nicole tried the same, not through pictures, but through small acts of rebellion against the narrative of her abuser. She wanted to be protected, but not destroy her family. She told her mother once what was happening at home, but there were no serious responses. For Bianca, a teacher's concern was not enough. Her world kept shrinking until the day an aunt recognized the signs, and only then is when her story surfaced. The aunt listened, and the truth emerged. Steve eventually reached breaking point. He was older, freer when he entered higher secondary school, and he had become more aware, he says. He knew he had to speak up because the secret was poisoning him. It was breaking him from the inside. He told a friend at the lycée in Etelbruck, not his parents yet, but first a classmate he trusted. Then came the letter. 7 years of pain poured into ink. Addressed to his parents, Steve wrote, I want to tell you something that I kept to myself for 7 years. A teacher sexually assaulted me. I kept this horrific secret to myself for a long time because I didn't want to confront you with it. I have cried many tears and blamed myself. I felt ashamed to share this with you. Marie-Rose, Steve's mother, listened. She took him seriously. The entire family did. No denial. No questions about whether he provoked it. Only protection. They took him to a doctor and to a prosecutor. And all of that started the investigation. The investigation was terrible, she would later say. Each testimony was like torture. Every time Steve was called in to speak, old wounds were ripped open. Wounds that had never healed. Dave's first disclosure was different. The police rang the doorbell, and they asked whether he was a victim of sexual abuse. His parents' world collapsed instantly. His father tried to help him relax, taking him to a toy store, letting him play at home. And then gently he asked the question, "Had anything happened at school? Any teacher crossed a boundary?" Dave answered immediately, "Yes, this person, and here is what happened." His father asked him to tell his mother too, and Dave did. No shame and no fear. Two boys abused by a teacher at a place where they spent most of their time in childhood. The police interviews were hard. Steve feared what would happen. He was asked questions, he was allowed space, and he received reassurance. And today, he says, the police did a great job. Dave also felt heard, understood, not pressured, and taken seriously. Bianca found it all more difficult, speaking to strangers on the other side of the camera during the interview. She knew you cannot lie to the police, and so she spoke the truth. "I was abused by my father and uncle." The weight of being believed cannot be measured. For many victims, this is the first moment they regain agency. It's not therapy, not courts, not medication, just someone saying, "I hear you." Nicole never got that moment from the police. She approached a lawyer only years later after the abuse. Therapy had finally given her the strength to share what happened. But the lawyer told her too much time had passed. Only civil proceedings might be possible, with witnesses. And so Nicole's story sits in a place between memory and justice, between pain and paperwork. Claude Weiss from the Youth Protection Unit says that victims often speak later, much later, and many cases never reach court at all. People walk in at different stages of life. Some register at local police, some are reported by teachers, some more come through judicial police directly. And most of the cases, 85%, involve someone the child knows. A father, a stepfather, an uncle or a cousin, or a teacher. Investigators usually rely on video recorded interviews in many of these cases, because physical evidence is rare, and witnesses are even rarer. And then there are moments when institutions fail, because before the teacher scandal broke in the commune of Bissen in the 1990s, a replacement teacher had heard something from a young student that a teacher sometimes liked to touch children under their pullovers. The replacement teacher reported it to the direction. Some colleagues said they already knew. Others were relieved she had spoken, but no one acted. Later, a cleaning lady and her husband collected evidence, physical evidence, paper towels with human liquids and biological traces. They reported it. Still nothing. Only years later, after multiple children were abused, was the teacher arrested. He was sentenced to 18 years in prison, reduced on appeal to 15 years. Later he faced another conviction for child abuse, 5 more years. The true number of victims was never known. He had a reputation. He was liked. He was respected. And if people knew, they did not talk. All 4 children learned the same lesson, that silence is safer. For Nicole, Speaking up meant risking her siblings' future. For Bianca, it meant risking her brother's safety. For Steve, it meant risking something terrible. And for Dave, it meant the shock of strangers arriving at the front door. Victims know their abuser is at fault, but they also believe that they somehow started the destruction. If the father goes to prison, who works? Who pays the rent? Who feeds the family? They imagine themselves as the bomb that blows up everything, the wave that starts to drown a family. Psychologists try to rebuild the foundations they never had. Trust, boundaries, and self-confidence. Learning that some adults are safe and some are not. And trusting strangers. These are gray zones they never knew existed. How should society respond? The experts say that abusers need treatment, therapy, and restraint. And when abusers leave prison, they must be monitored, trained, guided, or history repeats itself. Children cannot protect themselves. They do not call police, file lawsuits, prepare cases. They tend to wait, they drop signals, and they look for adults who actually see them. Sometimes those adults are teachers, sometimes parents, sometimes strangers or friends. But sometimes, tragically, there is also no one to listen. Steve, Dave, Nicole, and Bianca eventually spoke. Not because they found the right words, but because they could no longer carry them alone. They were given the confidence that they were not the fault at all of this. And so in Luxembourg and around the world, child protection laws must be strengthened. We must keep our eyes open and listen and take seriously the stories of our young voices. These stories are not rare, unfortunately. They are simply rarely told. Thank you for joining us for season 2 of DNA Luxembourg Crime Podcast. We'll be back.